on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Wally.
Does its job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan Tahue. Capable of anything. Tahue! Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city. We're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're Leighton Orient from E10. Leighton Orient from E10.
Hello and welcome to the Orient Hour this week. My name's Richard Priest. I'm joined in the studio today by Eastsider Tony Smith and Orient legend Terry Howard. How are we doing today, chaps?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Rich.
Good evening. It's been a great time over in the West Side last couple of games because it's the only place I'd ever spent.
Fantastic. Well, we've got a bit of a packed show tonight. We've got a lot of things to talk about. And we Billy Herring sat down earlier on with Dan Aggie, so we'll put to bed whether I'm pronouncing that right or not as well. So let's start off with last weekend's cup game. Carlisle, 3-1 win. Tony, you at the game? Thoughts?
That nice win in the end. I mean, first half, I think to be fair, we managed to dominate. Elmes, again, was exceptional. I know I come on here and say how wonderful he is all the time, practically, but that's because in my eyes he is. Couple of glaring misses meant we were only 1-0 up at the half-time. Got the second half, Carlisle had the better of it to start. They had a chance before they scored, 5 minutes in. And Joynen's goal, which was the second goal, was against the run of play a bit. But after that, we settled down and played some good stuff and was good value for our win.
I mean, Shaq Ford played as well. We haven't seen too much of him yet, have we? But it's good to see him get a start.
Yeah, he got caught offside a lot of the time. But a lot of good goal scorers do, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't his day. I mean, you look back off long enough. I mean, Macaulay Bond, for instance, in more recent times, he got caught offside a lot. Peter Kitchen, don't tell him that down the supporters club, but I've got a long enough memory to see the linesman's flag go up there. But no, it wasn't his day, and he'll have better times. But I think there's something there. We'll see how we go there.
Yeah, Terry, the FA Cup games, I mean, obviously you've played in a lot of these. The May stand was closed again. You know, what are your thoughts on this? Because obviously, I know maybe it creates a better atmosphere because there was going to be less people. I mean, in the league, we're getting, you know, 8,000, 7,000 people every week. I guess we were never going to get that for the first round of the Cup. But, you know, as a player as well, you know, for these sort of games, has it lost its magic a little bit, maybe?
It's a strange thing with the FA Cup. I said this before, we always look forward to the FA Cup because the ultimate goal is getting to the third round and getting a dream tie. That was what you was aiming for. So, going, and I know football's changed a lot now. We always played our strongest side. And to be fair, we had a reasonably strong side out Saturday. I understand why the manager would want to play a couple of boys that haven't been playing, see how they look, give them a bit of fitness. But with regard to the stadium, yeah, I'd rather them open up a little bit more of the stadium because even though you've got a lot of people in, say, two sides of the ground, it becomes a bit soulless, you know, where so much of the ground is empty. I looked at the Charlton game at the weekend, and with that big stand there, it just, you know, I'd rather it sort of be half full in each part of it rather than full up in two parts of it, yeah. You know. It's just my opinion.
I suppose one of the things as well is when you, because of where, obviously, it's different from when you played, the tunnel was on the other side, but if you're running out this time, you're facing an empty stand as well. Yeah. I mean, I always wondered whether, you know, that hits the motivation straight away because you walk out and the first thing you see is that huge empty stand in front of you. And I know you've got the noise behind you and stuff as well, but...
Yeah, I mean, I understand the finances. I get why they do it. I understand that. But just from a personal point of view as a player, I'd rather... to say, see players, supporters dotted all around the ground rather than just in a couple of parts of it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I mean, my memory's terrible because I know we were having some of these discussions last week, and I didn't recall us really closing the stands. Certainly, when I was younger and you were around, it was always, you know, probably the same sort of attendances we got for the league, really, for the cup games. I suppose it shows a bit now, just, you know, whether it's a finance thing or what it is.
It has happened in recent times. They've been shutting stands. I mean, Morden Tiptree's the best
which is the one I have no memory of.
There was certainly, they put the away fans in the North Terrace that day, so there was still two stands shut. It was just a different configuration. We haven't had many home league FA Cup games in recent history. Mm. We tended to get drawn away, so it hasn't shown up quite so much. It hasn't happened before.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of times in the early rounds back in the day, we had Birmingham, and obviously it would be interesting to see what they'd done then, because obviously they brought a lot of supporters down. I think even Bristol Rovers brought quite a few when we played, and all the ground was open then. I think we got a fairly decent crowd for them games, but if you'd had a Birmingham in the lower divisions and in the early rounds, I think they would have had to open more of the ground up.
Yeah, I mean, I won't mention the Enfield game too much, but I still remember those early ones as well, but they were still full, you know, the stadium was all open for those days. But anyway, back to the game. I mean, what I would say at the moment, with Carlisle, it seems to be that we've got their number a little bit, I think, aren't we? It's not often that I feel that we're someone else's bogey team. It tends to be the other way around.
Yeah, us to Carlisle is kind of what Stevenage are to us at the moment. It's a weird one. We all come up together, but Stevenage seem to have our number at the moment, but we've got Carlisle's. It's a strange one.
I sense the substitutions were a little bit, we don't fancy a Tuesday night up in Carlisle. It was a little bit, let's go for it, lads. Yeah, it went well. It could have gone wrong, but we took Cooper off and replaced him with a forward player and things like that. And that's not normally the sort of thing which he does. He's a little bit more conservative than that. But I don't think, to be honest, he fancied a replay there, and luckily it works in their favour.
Yeah, I mean, it's always quite like listening to Paul Simpson, actually. I find him as one of these quite refreshing managers. I mean, after a lot of games, I try, you know, depending on how we've done, but I want to hear the opposition manager's thoughts on it. I do tend to listen to him quite a lot, and I always find him pretty reasonable, you know. He'll tell the truth, you know, we weren't good enough today, they were a lot better than us, we need to do this better. You know, you get a lot of fans online saying, oh, that was two crap teams or whatever, but, you know, for this, he was, you know, they were better than us, and he kind of was a copy of what he said in the league game, to be honest.
There were a lot of managers that you listen, obviously the interviews go on YouTube and folks, places like that, and you hear 30 seconds of it and think, no, I don't really want to listen to this. But when Paul comes on, you do listen all the way through. You know, he does come over as a sensible man who's is doing his best for his club, and I hope it works out for him now. I know it's a dog-eat-dog game, but good on him.
Well, the draw was the next day, and we've got Chesterfield away. I mean, it's strange for everyone to say, oh, we didn't want that, because considering they're two leagues below us and they're a non-league side. But, you know, they put Portsmouth away at the weekend on the FA Cup first round. So, you know, it's going to be a difficult game, right?
Yeah, I mean, the likelihood is they might only be one division away from us next season. You know, they'll be licking their lips at that home tie against another League One side. They'll be up. Listen, at the end of the day, we are two divisions above them. You mustn't forget that. We're there because we've got very good players. So it's one of them games where you've got to match what they do. I would imagine they'll come hard at us early in that. You know, I'd be disappointed if they didn't. But you've got to match, you know, their hard work, their work rate. Hopefully a little bit of quality shines through, but I was looking at an interesting stat the other day. I think at the moment they're ahead of where Wrexham and Notts County were.
I was about to say that after, yeah.
Yeah, which is...
They're on for a record season.
Yeah, I mean, that's exceptional when you think how well them two teams did last year. So it's certainly a game that's got our attention, and I'm sure the boys, if they don't know it, Richie will remind them how difficult that could be.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, really, because when that draw was made, I was looking online at some of the comments, and it was almost like typical Orion fans, because it was like, oh my God, could this be any worse? And I was like, you know, I mean, to be fair, I was probably feeling the same inside. I was like, you know, out of all the non-league teams, they're the only one I didn't want. And also, you know, I probably wasn't many league teams that I would have rather not had than them as well. So, I mean, what do you think, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, classic cliche, everybody wants a home draw. And I watched the game between Chesterfield and Portsmouth, and they were worth their win. And they've got good players, but the Orient have got good players now. Yeah. So it's another day, and who plays the best on the day is going to win the game. Or if it's a draw, back at our place, and it'll be a good night. So,
yeah, I mean, I do sometimes think that, you know, I don't think people realise, maybe fans or just how good we actually, like the players that we've got, how good they actually are at the moment. I mean, I'm as devastated as everyone about Jordan Graham being out, because, you know, he was on course, I think, to clean up at the end of the season awards for me. But, you know, we've got the interview coming up, but Dan Agge's coming back soon. There's an interesting point in there, actually, which I won't go into too much yet. We'll talk about after, where Bill mentions a kind of a comparison from when we went up when you were playing, Terry, and we got a player in January that sort of transformed our season. So there's hopefully something that could possibly happen there. But, I think I mentioned it previously, but, you know, you look around, certainly that midfield area, and I'd go as far as saying the keeper and defence, that's in parts as well, that... But, you know, Galbraith, El Mizuni, Jordan Graham, Theo Archibald, Brandon Cooper, the way he's playing, Sol Breen in goal, who for me is, it's not really been talked about because I haven't missed Vigourou, and Vigourou was the best keeper I've probably seen nudging Paul Heald out of the way since I've been going. And, you know, we had the fact that nobody's really mentioned it because I think Sol Breen's been that good. You know, we've got some good players there.
It was noticeable on Saturday how he was coming out, and obviously Carlo were going direct towards the end, and he was coming out and dominating his box, which is something you'd probably Vig's superb shot stopper, but he possibly didn't do as well. So it was just great to see, and now I've got a lot of time for Sol.
I think as a defender, one of the greatest things you can have for a keeper playing behind you is someone who actually comes and controls his box. So going back to, you just mentioned Paul Heald, Peter Wells was a decent shot stopper, but Wells, he didn't really like coming for crosses. When Hildy came at the side, it was just like a different keeper, like, because he would come. I think the first game was at Grimsby, and early on there was a couple of crosses, and he was coming. We were a little bit in shock, like, wow, there is such a thing as keeper's ball. But I think you just touched on it there, that no one's really mentioning Lawrence. Yeah. They're not really, because Sol Breen has done so well. He looks very confident.
Yeah, it's always dangerous in the centre half shares keeper's ball, isn't it? You know, something's gone wrong there.
Yeah, well, so we played last night. It was there's a new name for this, and is it the Bristol Motors? It says something like that, isn't it? I should have looked it up before.
Bristol Street Motors, is it?
Yeah. So they've changed the name to that. So we played last night, Portsmouth. Tony, you were there.
I was there. But you did see the highlights.
I did. I watched the whole game. I watched the game as well. I mean, go on, you go first.
I'll go first. It was obviously a little unfortunate to get a break like that early on, where one of the guys gets sent off. I mean, it wasn't clear. We were all shouting in the box penalty from where we were, but we were in block C. If we were really lucky, we'd have someone tonight who was there in block D or block E. You'd be able to cover that one. But obviously, as soon as it was outside the box, you thought it was going to be a red card here, and it happened. And after that, to be honest, for the rest of the half, we didn't control the ball well enough, possibly due to the personnel we had on there. And Portsmouth had the two best chances of the first half and went ahead. Second half was a lot better. We made a couple of positive changes. Pickett got a goal and turned. And unfortunately, we made a mistake at the halfway line and got run past by a team with 10 men. So you can blame the mistake or you can blame the level we were committed. But obviously, there was the other side of thing when we got to 1-1 that we actually knew that to be certain of going through, we had to win by 3 clear goals, which you sort of can do if you're a man up. But you're taking chances to do that because the other team have got 10 good players a lot of the time. So that's how it went in my eyes.
I mean, I don't care if you've seen the goals yet. It's against 10 men. For me, it was, you know, it didn't even, you know, sometimes when you play against 10 men, it's noticeable you're playing against 10 men. Sometimes it's not. I mean, this is the disappointing thing, I think, for me, was the fact that you wouldn't have even known watching that game today, unless you were counting the people on the pitch, that they were down to 10 men. I mean, there was fringe players given a chance there. In my opinion, nobody really took it at all. I know it's difficult. This is what I wanted to ask you, because Richie always says, you know, I need to give these fringe players a game, I need to play them, and I agree with that 100%, but is it hard for these fringe players when they're all coming in with other fringe players? Because they're not fit enough either, right? So the performance probably isn't going to be up to scratch. I mean, is it sometimes a case that you'd think, put one of these fringe players on who needs fitness with 10 regulars kind of thing, and that way, you know, they can sort of, if they need to not carry them through, but, you know, they've got the fitness levels there. I mean, is that the way to go, or is it...
Maybe if you're looking to give about four of them a game, as you quite rightly said, play 9 boys that have been playing with 2, and then bring the other 2 on, but make sure that the team still stays strong.
Yeah.
It is difficult, because going back years, I don't know how much match practice they get, because back in the day we had the football combination, reserve players got games regular, so although it wasn't quite what the first team was, you were getting some sort of match practice. I'm not sure how much actual match practice they get now. So it would be so difficult, and especially with the demands of modern football, they're a lot fitter now. You know, back in my day, you could maybe have one reserve game and get thrown back into the first team. You look at all levels of professional football now; they bring them along a lot more steadier than they did back when we were
playing.
There's
nothing now, right? There's
no,
there isn't any, unless they organise a behind. Occasionally, you'll see a behind closed door friendly, but even then, like, we've had nothing so far this season.
It was structured last night. You could see that the guys who played last Saturday are probably going to play this Saturday only got a half. You could say it was quite obvious looking at the changes that were made. And obviously you've got guys like you two was mentioning who didn't have match practice playing 90 minutes. So, you know, the performance suffered. And obviously Elmiz was wrapped up in the stands and wasn't coming on to do his normal, you know, the last game in that trophy, he got us out of trouble. But
just touching what you're saying, probably if we had Galbraith, Elmiz and Jordan Brown playing, it would have been a different story. Playing with them boys, obviously, they're technically very, very good. When you've got a man extra, pass the ball about, you make the opposition run about, and maybe we didn't do that last night. You know, you can tell me whether, you know, sounds like our passing was a bit off, you know.
I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that I noticed. I mean, I wanted to hear from Richie, to be honest, because I would have been quite interested to see what he said, but obviously Matt Harrell did the interview, which we'll listen to shortly. But, you know, I would have been interested to see, you know, what his thoughts on it, because that was kind of the thing for me that watching it that surprised me, Moise. I mean, it's strange because you get a very different view watching it on the screen than you do, I think, when you're in the ground. But the amount of misplaced passes, the amount of balls that were cut out, and, you know, it's not really... I mean, I'm kind of used to the missing chances because we've been doing that a lot this season. But, you know, the fact that the passing wasn't even there, even... And I felt... personally, that we were a bit shaky at the back, which I haven't. Whether it's the fact that and by the way, none of those goals were the goalkeeper's fault at all, by the way. But, you know, I wonder again the fact that maybe there's a different keeper that they're not used to. But then Beckles was coming back from injury as well. I mean, the second half, Prattley was playing centre back, which he's been out injured and that's not his position. So I think, you know, we had to win by three clear goals to go through. I suspect early on, once we were 1-0 down, or certainly 2-1 down, it was a case of this isn't going to work now. But
I mean, Prattley only stayed there about 20 minutes because Dan Appy came on, didn't he? And he pushed forward again. Yeah. But, no, I mean, one reason why a defensive record, in my eyes, has been so good is we've been able to keep the ball in front of them. And we just, you know, we did give the ball. You can see that on the TV. The ground, we did misplace passes a hell of a lot more than we normally do.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good to see, say, like Jaden Sweeney play, because I'm a big fan of his, but... last night, I mean, I saw some people online saying they thought he did really well. For me personally, I didn't think he was that great, but I have a feeling he might be one of these players where he's almost got to play every week to be at that standard. You know, I think some players, you take them out, and unfortunately I think we've got a lot of these players, this is the problem, where if they're not playing, that their levels, maybe it's just because of the intensity we play at, or as you say, Terry, like it's a different game these days as well, that, you know, if I didn't play to any level, but when I did play five-a-side or seven-a-side, if I missed 1 or 2 weeks, I was in agony for the next 3 weeks after playing again. And, you know, I know it's slightly different as a professional, but maybe, you know, with the intensity we play, it takes... You've almost got to be playing every single week to stay at that
level. Sure you want to play every week at any level. I'm sure you do.
One thing I would say as well, I mean, you know, Aaron Drinan again last night, when he moved to the right for the second half, I thought he put in some really good crosses, actually. And it kind of dawned on me that the time that I thought he played best was actually under Jacket, and when Richie first came in, and he was on the right-hand side with Harry Smith on the top, and I think it was Theo on the left. And he used to put in some great balls from there. And, you know, it kind of got me thinking in my head that maybe, you know, Jordan Graham's out now. Maybe that might be a position that we could possibly utilise him in a bit more now, because I think he puts in a great ball, and I think we've sort of seen that going up front. I mean, I know Richie said again, like he kept saying with Charlie Kelvin last year, that his finishing in training is phenomenal, but you know, we don't really see it in the matches, to be honest. But you know, possibly on the right hand side, Aaron Drinan can do a fairly decent job there, putting some balls in.
I think the trouble is you've got to think of who's putting in balls too, and if we're not really we haven't got a Harry Smith playing at the moment. I mean, if you're talking about Piggott, possibly happiest when he's dropping in and knocking balls as a 10. You know, he's not really that type of player. Took his chance well last night. But
yeah, I was going to say, actually, Terry, I mean, Joe Pigger starting to look the part now. I mean, I say he had his critics over the first few weeks, but he clearly wasn't fit. But you can actually see something there. For me, I'm really starting to see what a good player he is now.
You just said it. We talked about fitness. It's so imperative now. And when I've watched him this season, I'm like you. There is something there. His touch is good. he's obviously becoming a bit more mobile now, and I think players are starting to understand, like, develop a relationship with him. The midfielders starting to link up a bit better with him. When I've seen him, I'd like to see him put himself about a little bit more. You know, he's not a giant, but he's not a small lad either. And sometimes I feel like with Davin Drinan, you know what you're going to get with him. He will put himself about a bit. He'll be a pest. He'll be a nuisance. If he's not playing well, he'll sort of make himself a bit of a nuisance. And I'd like to see Joe Piggott doing that a little bit more. But yes, I agree that I think he's got something. I think he's certainly, you know, if Dan Agia comes back in, he's certainly a player. Will they try and play together with him? I don't know. We'll see. I doubt it. But he's definitely becoming maybe a good backup if it all works out with Dan Agia when he comes back. So I agree with you. I think the kid's improving, and I think he will be an asset to us over the season.
Good stuff. Well, let's listen to what Matt Harrold had to say after the game last night.
Matt, thanks for joining us. What's your verdict on the performance?
Pretty disappointing, to be honest. I thought we started the game pretty well. Asked a few questions of them. They obviously went down to 10 men, and then I just don't think we capitalised enough. I thought we huffed and puffed without really pinning them in and creating enough sustained pressure. And then in the second half, I thought we got really loose and bad decisions. And it was disappointing, to be honest. I thought it was there for us to kind of dominate the ball and create more chances and kind of back up a lot of the stuff we've been talking about over the last few weeks, because we're on a really good run. We haven't lost many games recently, so I think overall we're pretty disappointed, especially with the second half. I just think we huffed and puffed without really creating anything meaningful other than Piggs's goal, which was probably a good individual effort. So disappointed.
No doubt disappointed in the manner in which both goals were conceded.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. I think I said we were loose when we had the ball. I then thought we were loose kind of when we lost it. We were out of position, out of shape. People didn't recover in quick enough. I mean, for the first goal, I think one man on his own in the box gets the first contact, and then it's just a bit of sloppiness. So, yeah, frustrating and poor in the moments, and we've spoke about it all season in the league especially. Moments are what decide games, so we weren't good enough in the moments we had to capitalise and score, and we weren't good enough in the moments where we gave the ball away and we were out of shape and we don't recover quick enough, we don't defend the box well enough. So disappointed.
How big a setback is it to be out of the competition?
Yes, yeah, a setback. I think the club wanting to go through, not just because you want to get in the habit of winning games. Obviously, there's a financial side to it as well. And also, we've got a strong squad. We've got good players, and we want to keep giving them games, competitive games. And they're knocking on the door, asking for opportunities, but you've got to go and back it up on the pitch. So, frustrated. Really wanted to go through. We want a culture here where you want to win every game. We want to go through. We want to compete in cup competitions, go on cup runs. So, that's frustrating, that side of it, definitely.
Theo Archibald didn't appear in the second half. Is that because of an injury?
No, we planned. Where we've got a few injuries at the moment, we planned kind of 45 minutes. We actually played a couple longer than we wanted. But, it was nothing like that. It was just a precaution. We wanted to get 45 minutes in them. Theo done well when he was on, created some chances going down the outside. So, yeah, no worries with injury.
It's a big game at home on Saturday. Now, Oxford United, Liam Manning has left the club. Is that going to be difficult as you prepare for that match?
It's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, they're obviously a good team. We've watched them a lot this season. A lot of our opponents have played Oxford already, so they're a good team. It's going to be a big game, tough game. I think it'll be a good atmosphere here. And it's a game we've really got to relish and look forward to, I think. Little bit of a setback tonight, you know. Wanting to go into it with loads of momentum, but I think it's hard to know with a new manager or a new temporary manager in charge. We don't know exactly what will happen. But all we can do is affect ourselves, prepare as well as possible, prepare the team as well as possible. And I don't think there's anything to fear, you know. It's a good game for us. I think the pressure's off a little bit. And we're in good form. We're in really good form. We even think on the run we're on, we probably should have more points than we've got. So we've got to attack it and look forward to it.
Well, Punt, Max Sanders and others, would they be contention for that one?
Touch or go. We don't know. We'll train tomorrow and we'll find out if they're any closer. I think there's a few we're checking on. But no, I mean, we'll see tomorrow.
The draw for the cup has been made, and it's Danny Webb, of course, and his league leaders, Chesterfield.
He's a manager.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a tough draw for us. They're a good team. They're obviously used to winning. They've got good experienced players, good manager and coaches. So, it's a good game. It's one we want to relish. We know it'll be tough. I think it's a good draw, good FA Cup, it's what everyone wants. I don't know whether it'll be on TV, but there may be a possibility of that. So we've got to enjoy it, but we want to go through. We want to get through to the third round and get a good draw.
Finally, maybe you can help me on this one. At the moment, Leighton Orient's game at Port Vale on that international weekend is still going ahead. When will the decision be made?
So what's the date today? It's the 7th. I think we'll know by the 10th if that will go ahead. We thought they had a few internationals, so I think they've got a couple on standby, so we'll just wait and see. But at the moment, we're predicting it's going to be on, but I think we definitely need to know by the 10th, so we'll know by then.
Thank you, Matt.
Cheers. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
Saturday felt special, and it was. Leighton Orient into the next round of the Cup for only the second time since the club was saved by Nigel Travis and Ken Teague. The first goal from Aaron Dwine in over a year, and the first time the O's scored three in one match in 11 months. I still believe in the magic of the Cup. Some of my most precious memories have come from football's oldest tournament. I was at Stamford Bridge when Peter Kitchen scored that fabulous goal to knock out Chelsea. I remember queuing to use the payphone at Woodford's old Snakes Lane ground to share with the listeners of LBC Saturday Sports Show Orient's narrow victory over Town. And I couldn't believe the wonderful twists and turns as the O's dug deep to beat Dagenham in a 9-goal thriller. And of course, there is that goal against the Gunners from the man capable of anything, Jonathan Tahure. Even when Orient have been on the wrong side of an upset, I can appreciate the drama and the importance of the occasion, knowing that I've seen a piece of history that'll never be forgotten. And that's why it felt sad to see parts of Brisbane Road not used on Saturday. Two full-strength sides, both going for the win. The way Joe Piggott takes his penalties is unusual but effective. Aaron Dwynan's long-awaited goal could provide a huge boost for a player who always gives his all. Soturio putting the issue beyond doubt with an excellent late strike. Portsmouth have gone 26 games in the league since they last suffered defeat. Peterborough needed a penalty shootout to knock Pompey out of the League Cup. So you have to admire what Chesterfield achieved, the Spirites becoming the first team this season to beat Portsmouth in 90 minutes. And there is no doubt that Danny Webb and Paul Cook will relish the prospect of causing another upset. The O's, of course, now so close to a major glamour third-round tie. It's what the Cup is all about. Hard to take any positives from a poor performance and Orient's exit from the Bristol Street Motors tournament at the hands of Portsmouth on Tuesday night, so I won't. Instead, I'm going to look ahead to what promises to be an exciting clash at Brisbane Road in the league with high flyers Oxford United in town. It'll be interesting to see how their players react following the departure of Liam Manning to Bristol City. Tuesday night's emphatic 5-0 victory over Chelsea youngsters suggests that United's squad had the resolve required to build on an excellent start to the season. They're currently second, 3 points behind leaders Portsmouth, have also won 10, but they've lost 3 against Cambridge, Port Vale and Wigan.
Thanks very much, Dave Victor there. Went straight into Victor's view. Before we listen to the interview that Billy and Dan Aggie did, Terry, Jordan Graham underwent his operation back end of last week. For an injury like this, ACL injury, you know, he's just had the op. It's just all about the recovery now. What, six to 9 months, I think it is, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
this season is a write-off for him. I suppose he's just looking at now, next season already, and them early stages of it's soul destroying, because the time you're thinking that you're going to be out, and it's like looking up that mountain, and it will get easier with time, but it's such a shame, because he's brought a lot to our team recently. I think he's been one of the reasons why we've had the upturn in form. Gives us lovely balance to our side, you know, with him on one side, Theo on the other. You can swap him over, you know, it's like a manager's dream really, that he can do that with his wide players. He's going to be a big miss, you know, and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, we're going to listen to the interview in a second, but, you know, Dan Aggie, possible replacement when he comes in, or is he, are we looking to think more in the centre for him, maybe?
Well, I mean, there's obviously
Dan Egge. He's comfortable in those front three positions.
Yeah, we're talking about Dan Egge in January, aren't we? Still. Yeah. So we've still got a couple of months and we can't really think that way. I mean, Galbraith played out wide the other day. He played in the middle last night because that's really his position.
Yeah, I think that's the way. You don't want to move players.
That's the way he's looking to try and get his. Yeah, because he's a good player and he wants to get him on the pitch. Yeah. So that's where he perceived the gap to be. But there we are.
I'd be loath to sort of upset the balance of Elmes, Jordan Brown, and Galbraith in it, because I think that's a big strength in our team.
I think it is.
You know, and I think Richie's got to find a way to sort of counter like missing Jordan Graham, but not at the expense of them three, because I think they're pivotal to what we're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's listen to Billy Herring sitting down earlier on with Dan Agge.
Thank you to Rich in the studio. My name's Billy Herring, and here I am with Dan Agge. Dan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. Now, Dan, look, before I go any further in the interview, I have to clear something up. Richie calls you Dan Agge. Dave Victor calls you Dan Agge. Which is it?
It's actually Dan Agge, but you've got loads of different people calling me different things, so I'll take whatever.
Fine, okay, so Dan and Jay, we'll go with that, right? Okay, well, Dan, it's lovely to meet you. And we've heard lots about you, but we've not been lucky enough to see you on the pitch this year. What have you sort of, how, first of all, how things have been since your injury? How have you found it?
I've been injured, obviously, tough when it was so close to the start of the season, but everyone's been great with me, you know, the staff have been great with me, the medical team's been great with me, and like now that I'm getting toward the end of it, it's been tough, but it's been a good experience for me. Yeah,
because footballers often talk about, you know, their lowest points being when they're injured and things. Is that how you, obviously you've just joined a brand new club, you want to make a good impression, and you're really unlucky in the last sort of pre-season game, you pick up that injury on the ankle. Is it a low point, or have the club been good enough that, you know, you've still felt part of things?
Yeah, I still felt part of things. And for me, like, normally, yeah, injuries are, like, with this injury, it hasn't felt as long as it actually has been. And I think that's because everyone's been great with me. And so, like, the days have gone kind of quick. And, yeah, so it's weird. Normally, yeah, it is frustrating, but it's also... it hasn't been as bad as I thought it would be. Yeah.
And we saw some really encouraging pictures of you back on the grass yesterday. How does that feel?
Yeah. No, it's good. It's great to be out of the grass, you know, and just be able to kick a ball and just run again. Be back on my own 2 feet. Yeah, it's great.
And it must be hard, you know, part of joining a new club is, you know, the learning about your teammates and the banter and stuff like that and things. Do you feel you've missed out on any of that?
No, because, I mean, I'm still in the group chat and... No, I still spend a lot of time with the lads. It's just not on the pitch, but day to day, I'm still spending a lot of time with them, and I feel like I do know them quite well.
And do you think, in a way, that, you know, you can almost use it to your advantage because you can see the things from the stands that we're doing really well already? So, does it excite you about watching what we're doing, the way we're playing, or are there things you're seeing that you're going, God, you know, when I get back on that pitch, I'm going to be able to do this?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I'm looking at the lads, and, you know, when they're playing great, I'm thinking, yeah, wow, like, it looks amazing. And I'm also thinking, oh, like, if I can also join in, I can add this and that, and yeah.
And with that, what do you think you will add to the team when you come back?
I think I'll add, like, a bit of directness, so pace and power, and, you know, I like to... take people, and I don't really like to turn back when I've got the ball and go back. So yeah, I think that's what I'll add. Hopefully I can add a lot of goals as well, and just be a dynamic, creative player and an exciting player.
Let's talk about that a bit then, because your breakthrough sort of came at Wimbledon initially when you scored 35 goals in their under-21s team. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it was a mixture of under-18s, under-21s at the time, and yeah, I scored 35. I think I had done it by March. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And that got you signing for Burnley, and they were in the time of the Championship, and then got promoted to the Premier League. And you played three times in the Premier League, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And so, what made you decide to leave Burnley, and what made you decide to sort of drop back down the divisions in order to sort of carry on with your career?
It's mainly just a lack of opportunity at Burnley. They had a lot of traffic at the time, and they were doing well, and I just couldn't really see a pathway for me at the time, and I felt that I needed to go to try and progress my career, to try and come back, go down to come back up, yeah.
And last year seemed to be your breakout season, where you felt your most settled at Crewe, and you scored 16 goals and got 5 assists.
Yeah, last season was a great season for me, you know, and I feel that's a result of me just playing. You know, after Burnley, I went to Oxford, and unfortunately, I didn't really get many opportunities to be playing consistently, regularly. So, I mean, Crewe was the first time I got that opportunity, and I think that resulted in me having a breakthrough season last season, yeah.
And when you're joining a new club, so you come away from Crewe, you signed for us. What did Richie say to persuade you to join us?
Oh, yeah. He just said where he sees me and what I can add to the team and where he sees the team going. And yeah, he's really ambitious. And I know this club's an ambitious club as well. So it wasn't really that hard to put, like, you know, in terms of trying to sell it to me, because I fully believe in the project. Yeah.
And you've played in League One before, is that correct?
Yeah, I have, yeah. I think I've played quite a lot of games in League One, yeah.
Played the majority of your career, I would say, League One.
Yeah.
What would you say the difference in the standard between League One and League Two is?
I mean, I don't think it's that much difference. Maybe it's just a bit quicker, but I do think League Two is probably a bit more physical, but I think League One is just a bit quicker, and I feel like if you do make mistakes, you're more likely to get punished in League One, especially against the better teams in League One, than you would in League Two.
Tell me about anyone that you're particularly looking forward to playing with this season. Obviously, you know, your new teammates and things, where you were starting to build those relationships in pre-season and things. And in pre-season, you kind of played out wide on the right. But I know that you said that you feel as confident playing anywhere across the front line. So who is it you're looking forward to playing with most?
I'll probably have to say Ethan Galbraith for me. Before I got injured, I felt like we were starting to build a connection in terms of just knowing where each other will be, and he will find me quite a lot. And you know, we like to do 1-2s together in training, so I'll probably say him. Yeah.
So is it in the training sessions, is it just a bit of keyboard, you and him knocking around everyone else, right?
Yeah. I would say that. Sure, if you ask him, you probably won't remember.
Has anyone ever told you? So how much do you know about Leyton Orient as a whole, about the history of the club and things like that?
Before I came, I didn't really know that much, but from being here, I'm starting to see the history, and I've been reading up about it a bit as well. Yeah, so I know quite a bit now.
Have you read anything about the 1988-89 season? I know it's a bit before your time, before you were born, I would imagine.
I have read about
no?
it.
No? And you've not heard about the super loan signing of Kevin Campbell?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
So I'm going to read. The reason I asked this is because in 1988-89 we were sort of struggling towards the bottom middle half of the table, as it were, and then we signed Kevin Campbell from Arsenal on a loan deal, and he scored 9 goals in 18 games for us after Christmas, which propelled us up the league and into the playoffs, and we ended up going on to win the playoffs to then get promoted. Do you think you could have a similar impact, obviously coming in towards after Christmas time, coming into the team and maybe propelling us up the league? No pressure, by the way.
I would like to think so. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be working hard, and I'm going to try and score as many goals as I can and get as many assists as I can, and hopefully I can come out of the season with good numbers.
And I mentioned about who you're most looking forward to playing with. Who are the people that have made you feel most at home since joining the club?
I'll probably say everyone. Everyone's been great, and I feel like everyone's really to take me under their wing. So I wouldn't say there's anyone in particular. I think as a group collectively, we're all quite close, and everyone's been great.
And you know, that's an interesting thing. That's one of the things that was said last season about the spirit and within the changing room itself. A lot of players saying it's the best team they've played in with regards to the spirit and things. This year we haven't had it all our own way quite as we did last year. How has that been for players? You know, obviously when you're used to winning games all every week almost, to then, you know, we struggled at the start of the season. What's changed, or how have players adapted?
I mean, from the beginning of the season, I mean, we didn't have a great start, but I feel like everyone adapted fairly quickly, and I think everyone goes into every single game now knowing, thinking that we should be coming out with 3 points, and we just do everything we can to come out with 3 points. And right now, I think everyone's in a good, positive mindset, and they've got a good mentality. And we take it game by game and just try and get as many points as we can. Yeah.
And when you are injured, one of the roles that you would have to play would be around the changing rooms and picking up those guys. You know, certainly at the start of the season when results weren't going as they were, what role do you play in that to sort of geeing everyone up and making sure that everyone's remaining positive?
Yeah, I think it's just trying to encourage players. You know, if someone looks down or so on, I just need to try and pick them up, and you know, at half time, try and show them. Tell them how I see the game from the top and what they can do, especially with attackers. Just say where we see weaknesses in the defence or whatever. Just try and help and encourage them as much as possible.
Yeah, and as I say, you were saying about offering help and encouragement to the other strikers that are in the squad and things. Do you see that as part of your role, to help and support each other, or do you leave that to the management and the coaching staff? You know, where do the players fit in themselves amongst that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like to the players are close, we're all close together. We value everyone's input. So whether I could see something or whatever, I think, just it's beneficial. Yeah,
and as you say, you know, it's always going to help when you've got other pros sort of saying to you, let's try this next time and things like that, when you see weaknesses in the opposition and things. Yeah. Dan, talk to us a little bit about your journey, because you know, you were a London boy or Kingston, shall I say, and then you've kind of moved up north, you've come back down here. Do you prefer living down south, being close to family and things?
Yeah, I do prefer living down south. Yeah, it's always nice to be close to my family, and yeah.
And so what was it like when you were away from home? So you know, Burnley, Crewe, you know, it's a fair old whack away from London.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, I was forced to grow up quite a lot, especially when I moved to Burnley at 18. I feel like, moving up north, I feel like it's a different world from London, but yeah, I feel like I can adapt to it, and I adapted to it, and I enjoy both. Yeah.
And you didn't come back down south saying "hey up" or anything like that, or you weren't breeding whippets or anything, though.
No.
I'm sure I'll be offending some people with those comments. I'm only joking, everybody. Take it easy. What would you say your main ambitions are for when you are back on the pitch, when you are back playing and getting game time?
I would just say to try and score as many goals as I can and create as many chances as I can and get as many assists as I can and just try and be exciting on the pitch. Yeah.
And have any messages at all for the O's fans who are looking forward to seeing you back on that pitch?
Yeah, just hopefully it won't be too long and hopefully soon you'll be able to see me in action. You know, it's been a while for a lot of O's fans, they probably haven't seen me. So, I think it'll be good.
And, you know, you must have, like, your own individual fitness program at the moment. Things are stepping up. And how are you finding the fitness? Is your match fitness getting there? Are you getting to the point where you're getting excited again? Or are you still a bit cautious, taking it easy at the moment?
No, I'm getting really excited. I'm probably getting too excited. I think today, I mean, meant to be doing strides and I'm out here sprinting. Yeah, so I think, yeah, Keith's probably got to take me down a notch, but yeah, I'm really excited. I'm raring to go.
And that must be important, the relationship between yourself and the physios when you're doing your recovery, because you know, it can be a lonely time when you're training in your own programs and you're away from everyone else. And how have you found sort of other players that have been injured, the likes of Adam Thompson? Have they been a support for you as well?
Yeah, they've been a massive support. I mean, since I got injured, everyone messaged me, and you know, me and Alan Thompson, we've got a lot of similar rehab programs, so we spend quite a lot of time together. And yeah, I feel like all the other injured players have been supportive of each other, and yeah. But I think that relates to us always, just all of us being quite close anyway.
And the likes of, you know, we mentioned Keaton earlier on, and Aidan the Kitman, are those the sort of people that keep your spirits up and keep you going?
Yeah, I'm already talking to Aidan. He's a great guy.
Well, Dan, thank you ever so much for joining us today. We really, really appreciate it. And listen, hope the recovery goes well. Don't push yourself too hard too quickly, because we want you back on that pitch to stay, right?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, listen, you take care. Have a nice evening. Big thanks to Dan and Jay there, and I'm going to hand over back to Richie and the boys in the studio. Cheers, guys.
Thanks for that, Bill. Interesting chat there. Terry, one point I wanted to bring up to you. He obviously, we touched on it earlier, but he mentioned the fact that in 1989 we had a signing that came in January. Obviously, we're not going to be bringing Dan in then, but he's going to be fit in January, and the impact they had. I mean, you know, I think kind of tongue-in-cheek, he sort of said, I'd like to think I can do something like that, but... You know, we've seen what he looks like in the past. I mean, you know, as Bill said, we don't want to put any pressure on him. But, you know, a signing like that or a new player like that, which is what we're missing, is those goals. It can have that impact.
Yeah, it really could be massive for us. If he continues like from what we've seen him doing at Crewe, it could be... Well, look, let's think big. It could be the difference between us staying mid-table or maybe getting into the playoffs. Who knows? You know, I look at this league this season. Even the teams that are at the top, they're not scary good. They're good teams, but we're a good team now. And I think a player like that can just elevate us, if it works out, like Kevin did back in the day, to another level.
Yeah, and you're right there, actually. I think Richie said something similar recently. Tony, I've not really seen anyone, for me, that's... I've thought... And Richie said the same thing, like, we've worked this league out now, as in we know the standards, we know who we're playing, we can see it, and there's been nothing that's been... Even, you know, those early games, I mean, the worst we played was probably Stevenage, but, you know, we know what Stevenage are like. Portsmouth, I know it was a 4-0 game, but were they a 4-0 team? They weren't really, were they?
I mean, the one thing, when he came in, and the first thing Richie said about him, he said, well, don't worry about the fellow who's gone. He was talking about Paul Smith. He only got 10 goals last year, and Dan got 13. And I'm thinking, it's a little bit more complicated than that, isn't it, Richie? But, yeah, we wanted to be... The first, we don't want to compare him with others. We want to be the first Dan Agi. You know, we don't, you know, we want to see him do it on the pitch, and we're looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah, yeah. And Terry also, as you mentioned there, it's important because he's been in and around the players while he's been getting fit, and having, I guess, someone who has been injured with him, in like Adam Thompson, has been helping him through. And he also mentioned there he's looking forward to linking up with Ethan Galbraith because he felt that they had a bit of a partnership in pre-season.
Yeah, when you look at Galbraith, one of his great assets is his passing ability. You know, ally that with Dan's pace, it, as I say, it could be very fruitful for us. You know, like we said before, our midfield three technically are very good. They pass the ball well. If they've got an outlet that we haven't got at the moment, maybe up the centre there, as I said before, that could really work out well for us.
Yeah, I mean, the rumours are that he should be back. Well, originally they were saying January. There's rumours it could be before that, but I suppose we don't want to... He's got to get out to some level.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna take a little while for him to find his feet, so to speak. But, you know, if hopefully he comes back a bit sooner and he's firing all cylinders maybe by the end of January, hopefully.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's have a listen to Matt Roper in our latest Roper's Rant.
The King's Speech. Not necessarily something you would associate with football, of course, but yesterday it was announced that our beloved sport could become the subject of independent regulation. Is it needed? You bet ya. We currently have two bodies that manage the game, the FA and the EFL. Now, I bet if I polled everyone listening to this with the question, do you like and trust the EFL, then I'd get a fairly robust response and one with big numbers in the no camp. People around these parts haven't forgotten the disgraceful way we were thrown to the dogs in 2017 by the Football League. The disgraceful ending to the game at Colchester. The way we were left to rot in the name of integrity. The disgusting attempt by them to limit ticket sales to O's fans away at Blackpool. And the absolutely unbelievable attempt by them to ask if the Fans Trust would cover medical bills simply so a home game could happen in late 2017. And yes, that actually did happen. For too long now, the authorities have had numerous chances to sort football out. The EFL will always point to the fact they are a membership organisation and that therefore clubs can dictate the rules. But the lack of leadership and passion for wanting to change is so clearly not there. Every time we get another crisis club scenario, they will trot out the same old statement. These issues are for the club to resolve, and we're working hard with the relevant parties to try and resolve them. But on almost every occasion, we see said club plunge further into the abyss, and matters are only as resolved when the lifeblood of any club, i.e. the supporters, take matters into their own hands, protest, or in some cases go much further to ensure they have a club to support. The Leyton Orient Fans Trust, I truly believe, is one such trust. Whilst I may speak from a rather biased viewpoint here, being a board member, Loft were a guiding beacon of light during the dark days and worked tirelessly to try and ensure that we had a future. Don't get me wrong, we encountered criticism, and we didn't, of course, speak for every O's fan. But with a possible lack of real understanding at the time from some, all we simply wanted to do, and this was the bottom line, was that we wanted to ensure there was a Leyton Orient to support. We arranged and held the first protest against the club ownership in 2016, followed by a much larger one in 2017, when we were assisted by our very good friends from Blackpool, who of course went through a sustained period of trouble and uncertainty themselves. We saw membership grow to almost 1,400, which is around about 30 to 35% of crowd numbers. We held meetings with the EFL and other stakeholders, sought to reassure the fans through a number of public meetings, and planned for all scenarios, including what I term as the nuclear option, were we to, God forbid, have to go down the Bury route and the club being wound up in the courts. 6 years on, and our membership numbers are scandalously low. I'll happily admit that. Why? Well, there's one real reason, in that over 50% of supporters' trusts don't see an increased membership until their clubs hit the rocks. On speaking with other clubs' trusts, that is fact. However, fans' trusts are not just there for a rainy day. Many of them up and down the country do sterling work alongside stable clubs for a brighter future for theirs and other clubs. Since our near-death experience, we at Loft have assisted several other clubs in trouble, two of them being Bury and Oldham, who of course now come out the other side, and with a bit of willy waving here, you'll find our name in these northern towns banded around with great respect. Back to the King's Speech. An independent regulator for football surely has to be attempted. I'll start with a negative that independent government regulation hasn't necessarily worked in other sectors, but it's who will be running the body and how sharp their teeth are as to whether or not we see big areas of change and or possible successes. Many talk about a fairer distribution of wealth amongst clubs being one massive area for the regulator to get his or her teeth into. But for me personally, one of the most important powers a regulator should have at their disposal is to firstly try and ensure that we do not see further rogue ownership of our clubs. And perhaps even more importantly, that if a club does fall foul of such scenarios, then the regulator has both swift and far-reaching powers to remove said owner before a club reaches breaking point. Football is a fantastic game, watched and played by millions. There's so much right with it. Look at the talent on offer in the Premier League, the number of clubs up and down the country supported by millions on such a small island, and of course a grassroots setup that dominates people's weekends from September to April every year. But there is so much wrong with the game. A lack of competition at the very top level, a men's national team that has failed to win anything since 1966, lower league clubs at the mercy of unscrupulous ownership, and a disgraceful lack of funding for parks football are but four areas that need addressing, and it's high time it does. Whether it is actually going to work or not, we need to try something different, and that difference will hopefully be an independent regulator for football that ultimately, in my opinion, can protect unique businesses of what we are. After all, we are community institutions that reach far wider than the 90 minutes on the pitch on a Saturday afternoon. So, finally, back to the Leyton Orient Fans Trust. Next Thursday, the 16th of November, we'll be holding our AGM in the Supporters Club at 7pm. Now, before we even get to the boring bit of any AGM, attendance as a member gives you an extra chance to sample the warm and convivial atmosphere of one of the best supporters clubs in the country. But with possible regulatory changes to football, and remember, whilst we are stable now, we're only ever one bad owner away from possible oblivion, it's important, in my humble opinion, that as many O's fans are members of the Trust as possible. Membership fees are scandalously low on a pay-what-you-want basis, with a minimum contribution of just £2. And the more members we see, the more of you we can represent at board level with the club and in far wider within the game. Leighton Orient are on the up. We have brilliant owners, a great manager, a brilliant supporters club and some of the best fans in the country. But we also have, even if I do say so myself, a quite superb fans trust and we'd love to represent more of you over time. Here's to a great game Saturday and up the mighty O's.
Thank you for that, Matt. Chaps, Saturday we've got Oxford, second in the league, looking very good. They've just lost their manager now as well, and I'm not sure we've played them properly in the league since we sent them down. I could be wrong, but you know, from memory, I can't. You know, Tony, how do you think that's going to go?
Well, good. You've got to be hopeful by the way we've been playing in the league. I mean, obviously it was a little bit of a setback last night, but it wasn't quite the full Monty in terms of playing. Oxford had a good start of the season, but I don't foresee it. I mean, the last time we played, we played Barnsley when they were third, and we were good, if not a little bit better for a point on that day. Things didn't go well when we played Portsmouth when they were top, but yeah, we'll stick in there. It'll be a tight game, and maybe we'll get more and one more than they get.
Yeah, we might have some. Obviously, Omar Beckles played last night. Prattley played last night. You know,
I think everyone who only played all the game last night probably won't start on Saturday. That's my forecast.
So
I think
hopefully see a stronger bench.
It'll be the lads. Yeah. It'll be the lads who only played a half last night. It'll be playing. I think.
Yeah, and Terry Craig Schultz in temporary charge at the moment. Someone you're familiar with from the old days. Mm. You know, they won 5-0. I don't know if it maybe Chelsea under 21s they played last night. It was an under 21 team they beat. You know, in these sort of games when there's a new manager, I mean, how much scouting can you do as such? Because, you know, they could play completely differently to how they've... You would like to think, or you would imagine, that they try and stick with what they know, but, you know, a new guy coming in trying to impress, maybe?
I think the fact that where they're in the league, they're not going to change too much. I think it'd be a bit mad to do that. Them not having a manager or just leaving could go either way. Sometimes it galvanises a team, sometimes they might be a bit lost. We'll find out Saturday, but I just hope whoever plays for us on Saturday does to them what Lee Harvey done to Craig Short at Brisbane Road in 89 in the playoff. That'd be great.
So any quick prediction then for Saturday?
We're going to nick it
2-1. 2-1. Tony, what do you think?
I was going to say 2-1, but I'll go 1-0.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still have my Orient hat for these things, so I've still never really convinced myself to a top-of-the-table team that we're actually going to do. But I'm going to go with 1-1 at the moment. I don't know. There's something that's just telling me that possibly we'll... I'd love to be wrong, because I'm bringing a West Ham fan with me as well, actually, and I want to convert him, and I've been bigging us up for so long that I don't know.
Did you notice this season, we seem to play a lot of teams that are in the top three? Whenever we play them, they seem to be in the top three.
There was
three.
A stage. When we'd only won two games and there were teams at the top of the table
said on that as well though is that we haven't even played anyone that's really impressed us that much. I mean, I think Oxford might be the first ones that before they lost their manager that I thought maybe we'll see something here, but you know, hopefully not, so we'll see. But but anyway, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Terry, Tony. It's been great to speak
to you. You're welcome.
Thanks very much, everyone. We'll see you at Oxford on Saturday, and up the O's.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're Leighton Orient from Eton. Leighton Orient from Eton. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We were formed in 1881, clans in Orient and so begun the old story and on it runs. We're Leighton Orient from Eton. Whatever challenge has come our way, the only faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're Leighton Orient from Eton. Leighton Orient from Eton. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around. So you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay